Welcome back to the Jeff Merrick Show. Matt Marchese filling in for Jeff, who is on assignment today, but will be back on Monday. Calgary Flames out in five games in the Western Conference semifinal. And joining us to recap what happened last night, look ahead to the offseason, is Eric Francis from Sportsnet. Eric, how are you today?
I'm excellent. How are you? Did you enjoy that series?
I said it in my opening. I'm sad it's over already because that felt like a 10-game series wrapped up into five because there were so many ups and downs. We saw what happened in game one, and then game two started much of the same way, and then it was like a tidal wave that hit Calgary, and here they are out in five games.
Yeah, it's, no matter what side of Red Deer you live on or anywhere in the country or just as a hockey fan, you didn't want that series to end. And, I think when people look back 5-10 years from now, you know, they're going to remember the 132-foot goal. They're going to remember the ridiculous numbers that Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl put up. They're going to remember the four goals in 71 seconds, the new NHL record last night. Just chaotic, and that's what we love in hockey. But I have to tell you also, I think people are going to remember 5 or 10 years from now, you know, the big talking point, certainly here in Calgary, probably not so much in Edmonton, but the disallowed goal. I mean, that's going to go down in Battle of Alberta history. And I don't think anyone's ever going to agree on whether the right call was made or not. But I know I've been on the phone with the league all morning and get an explanation for how it was made, why it was made. And I don't think any explanation will ever satisfy the fan base here in Calgary. They feel they got ripped off, and I don't blame them. I think the wrong call was made myself, but yeah, we all can have our opinions on these things. We had some pretty smart men who were making the call on that, and they decided otherwise.
Well, smart men make bad decisions sometimes, and sometimes they make bad calls. And frankly, I said it to Elliot in the previous segment. I'm watching the game, and I see this goal go in, and then I see the replay. And in my head, I said, there's no way that they're going to overturn this. They can't. And sure enough, I was wrong, even though I don't think that the call that I made in my own head was wrong. But I do feel like this is going to be some sort of a talking point because you don't want something like that to potentially decide a playoff game and one of so much importance like last night, because frankly, the Calgary Flames got screwed last night. That was a goal that should have counted. And we should, you know, it's almost as if they stole game six away from us, the fans. And we could have had that tomorrow night in Edmonton game six, which would have been great. But I do wonder if that's going to be a talking point because I didn't see a distinct kicking motion. I've seen a lot that were way worse than that were called goals. So I do wonder if this is a conversation that we are going to see this offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm writing about it right now. I mean, the four men in the room who made the decision, you know, there's over 175 years of NHL experience there. You know, Colin Campbell, Mike Murphy, you've got Chris King in there. And you got Bill McCreary, who was a longtime rep. You know, they unanimously believe that that was no goal. So there's no debate in their circles. And the one thing that Coley Campbell just said to me was there does not have to be – the blade does not have to come off the ice for there to be a kicking motion. I mean, obviously that was their ruling last night. I think that's what bothers people the most. They think, how can you – something be called a distinct kicking motion when you don't even lift your skate off the ice? Well, you know, by their definition, you certainly can kick something in without taking your foot off the ice. I thought Daryl Sutter's quote was, as always, very colorful, saying, if you kick someone in the head, then that's a distinct kicking motion. But if you drag your foot along the ground, that's not a kicking motion. So it's all subject to interpretation. And I think the one thing we all ask for is consistency, right? And they say that they put a lot into consistency and they try to compare it to other goals that have and haven't been allowed. But at the end of the day, it's still a tough pill to swallow for the Flames. But I will say, you know, there was still 6 minutes left in the game. There was enough time for McDavid and Draisaitl to combine for another three or four goals potentially. So we think that it was going to be the game winner. but we'll never, ever know. It's just unfortunate, I think, for the Flames and their fans and for hockey fans that McDavid ended in overtime, which is almost fitting, actually.
It really is. Eric Francis joining Matt Marchese on the Jeff Merrick Show. And so let's talk about the Flames here and kind of what went wrong in this series. We're under the impression that Jacob Markstrom was playing through something. That seemed to be pretty clear because he did not look comfortable this whole series. But that's, we've made a lot about that. For me, the guy that stands out as one that underperformed was Matthew Tkachuk. And coming off a 100-point season, you know, outside of the hat trick in game one, he had one assist and to me was largely a non-factor in this series. Was it something Edmonton did? Was it a matchup thing? Like, or was it just, hey, Matthew Tkachuk had a rough stretch of four games in this series and it just came at a bad time?
Yeah, I think that I think you got to give a lot of credit to the Edmonton Oilers. They did a really good job of shutting down Calgary's top line. And, you know, the amazing thing about it is the line that shut them down a lot was Edmonton's top line, which has been maligned for several years for not being able to play in their own zone. You know, Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid have been heavily criticized for, you know, being, you know, probably the two best players in the world offensively, but defensively kind of being non-factors. And they really turned that around. They changed that narrative. They did a great job shutting the Flames down. I mean, as did, you know, a very unheralded Edmonton defensive group. And at the end of the day, Mike Smith was fantastic. So, you know, obviously there's going to be a lot of talk moving forward. Johnny Gaudreau, Matthew Tkachuk, Elias Lindholm. No question the top line in the National Hockey League this season statistically. But when it mattered most in the second round, the last three games, they were kind of, I won't say they were non-existent because I thought they were a lot better last night. I thought the Calgary Flames carried probably a little bit more of the play than the Oilers did last night. And I thought that top line was pretty good, but they couldn't finish. And at the end of the day, Daryl Sutter said it was about execution. The Calgary Flames didn't execute. Three of the games of the five were tied, you know, midway through the third period. And yet the Calgary Flames fall in five. So that's an execution issue.
So the long-term future for this team seems like, in a way, it depends on what happens with Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk. We know Matthew Tkachuk is a restricted free agent. Johnny Gaudreau, on the other hand, is an unrestricted free agent. Do you think that their long-term futures are tied together? Like, if Matthew Tkachuk decides to sign an 8-year extension and stay in Calgary, does that make Johnny Gaudreau want to sign to stay here long-term? Or do you believe that Johnny Gaudreau's future is not tied to Matthew Tkachuk at all in this? Or vice versa?
You know, it's a great question. Like, I'd like to think that the two have sat down and had a beer at several points during this season and said, hey, what are you going to do? Because I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think about that? If they were tied together and these guys both felt, you know what, we think we've got something special here in Calgary and let's keep this thing going. But I think that's pie in the sky thinking. I can't see both of them being here in 2 years. There's very little chance in my mind, not just because they're both going to cost crazy amounts of money, but I just think that both are going to be unrestricted free agents where they can go out there and solicit offers from 31 other teams with better tax situations, better weather, in some cases, you know, maybe a better core or a chance to play with certain player that they've always wanted to play with or think that they would really mesh with. I just have a hard time believing that you're going to have two guys who probably are worth over $10 million a year moving forward on the open market that you could afford to sign either, but more importantly, that would both want to be here moving forward. I love my city, proud of Calgary. It's a phenomenal organization. But I think the grass is greener in a lot of other places, and I think that that's what one or both of them are going to find out.
So do you think that legacy matters to these guys, like to be with one? Like Jeff has mentioned it on the show before where, you know, Johnny Gaudreau, if he decides that he wants to stay here, you know, on a 7 or 8 year deal, that Johnny Gaudreau in all likelihood becomes, you know, the highest scoring Flame of all time. You know, maybe he has the most goals or most assists, most points, whatever the case may be. Do you think that stuff matters? And this is just a general question. It doesn't even have to pertain to Johnny Gaudreau, but just across the league, like we don't see a lot of guys stick with one team for 15, 16 years. You know, we saw, you know, Dustin Brown retired. He did that. Ryan Getzlaff retired. He did that. Patrice Bergeron's probably going to be in the same boat. We see it, but we don't see it that often. And part of that is the way that free agency is structured. Do you think that matters to the modern day player?
I wonder. And, you know, I think that's a great question as well, because Johnny Gaudreau would be considered probably the greatest player of all time if he stays here and rewrites the record book. Does that matter to a kid from Jersey? I don't know. He's invested 7-8 years of his life here. I think I'd like to think it would matter. And I have to say that I think that the game seven goal that Johnny Gaudreau scored in overtime, you know, puts him in an iconic category, you know, one of the greatest goals ever scored in the history of the play. Not the great goal itself, but what it meant for this franchise to get over a bit of a hump, for this group to finally get a little bit of confidence and get over a hump. I just wondered that night, you know, if that would have an impact on him, thinking, gosh, you know what, how could I leave this? How could I leave this great core, this great city, this great organization, you know, where I've put some indelible ink on it with this goal and with all the things that I've done. You know, I wonder if that matters to a player. Like, we're going to find out. I mean, at the end of the day, the Calgary Flames are going to offer him just about as much money as anybody else is in the league. I really believe that. He's that important to this organization. But it's going to be up to the player to decide what's important. Legacy, lifestyle. You know, he was married last summer. Does his wife like it here? By all accounts, she does. Do they want to raise a family here? Man, there are so many issues at play. At the end of the day, I think the money's going to be pretty equal wherever he goes. It's going to be top dollar. That's just a decision on where he thinks the fit is best. And, you know, the grass isn't always greener somewhere else. We know that. But sometimes players have to find that out the hard way. Or maybe they're right. Maybe the grass really is greener somewhere else.
Well, the grass is usually greener anywhere else but Calgary come December and January. So I think that's a pretty safe bet. And I'm just talking about the grass and the snow, people. Relax. I've never been to Calgary, so I can't make an accurate assessment. Yeah. See, you got it because you're smart. Other people, not so much. Okay, another guy that is due for a new contract is Andrew Mangiapane. And he, you know, 35 goals in the regular season, was really good, and he did a lot of his scoring not on the power play, a lot of it at 5-on-5 and a couple shorthanded goals. In the playoffs, he just had the 3 goals in 12 games, but is this a guy that we could see get a long-term extension? Maybe with that long-term extension, the money's a little bit less than what it would be on the open market, or is he going to be pushing for top dollar maybe on a shorter-term deal?
Well, I had a very interesting conversation with his agent, Rich Winter, on my radio show here in Calgary earlier this year, and he said he's going to strongly advise his client to just sign a 1-year bridge deal and then see what's out there. Do what Johnny Gaudreau's going to do. Do what Matthew Tkachuk's going to do. It doesn't mean you have to sign somewhere else, but get to July 1st. Get to unrestricted free agency. See how green that grass is elsewhere. And at the end of the day, you might say, you know what? I want to stay where I am. I love that this organization gave me a chance, whatever the case may be. But, you know, he's been the subject of some pretty tough love by Daryl Sutter. Maybe he looks at that and says, you know, he's making me a better player. Or maybe he's saying, I'm sick of this, and I don't want to be a second, third liner anymore. I want to be a first liner somewhere else. He never played a single minute on the top line this year, and he scored 35 goals. He's probably wondering, how many more could I score if I played on the top line with some real playmakers? So I would be shocked if he signed anything more than a 1-year deal. I think all three of those guys that we've discussed are all going to do, you know, the bare minimum, sign the 1-year deal for Tkachuk and Mangiapane and walk into free agency and see what it offers. Now, that said, Mangiapane's family may say, oh, my Lord, you've got a 6-year offer for $40 million or whatever the number is, $35 million. You know, this would set up our family for generations. Let's just take it. And if you're happy in Calgary, stay there. So I don't know. But I just look at it as a businessman, and I listen to what that agent had to say. And I think, boy, I think that they're going to, you know, just wait it out and get a little bit. Because on the open market, I think he'd be worth even more, obviously.
Always follow the money. That's how this works. Okay, so the Flames heading into next season, as it currently stands, have 6 forwards, 4 defensemen, and 2 goaltenders under contract. Actually, they have Sean Monahan as well on there. He's just on the LTIR. So 7 forwards, 4D, and 2 goalies. How much different do you think this team looks next year? Because if they can't bring back Johnny Gaudreau and they sign Matthew Tkachuk, you know, he just signs his qualifying offer and says, I'm just going to roll with this year. The same with Mangiapane. Do you think Calgary goes out and tries to spend here and just keep what they have intact, at least for another season, and then kind of reassess where they are after that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a puzzle that's just so hard to get a hold of. And at the end of every year, you've got to reassess. I mean, I think a lot of people always look at the core here in Calgary and they talk about the core. And I think they think, well, we've got a window here for the next 3 or 4 years. Well, I think that we're all seeing around the league, when people talk about the window of opportunity to kind of maybe challenge for a cup, it's small. It's really short. And it won't be too long before guys like Hanifin and Lindholm are up for contracts, and they're in for a massive payday as well. When you have a season like the Calgary Flames did, 9 players had career seasons in Calgary this year. That means that everybody's going to have their hand out for a whole lot more money, which means you can't keep a lot of them. So it's going to be, I would think that you're going to see the bulk of this team return next year. I mean, obviously, Shillington, Mangiapane, Tkachuk, they're all restricted free agents. They'll all come to terms, even if they're small, shorter deals. They're going to lose Gudbranson. They're going to lose Zadorov. Tkachuk, you know, obviously, Gaudreau is the big question mark. But, you know, the rest of the core is still here for at least one more year. So I think you'll see much the same team next year, and the story will be whether or not they move forward with Johnny Gaudreau or not.
Well, it's going to be a very, very interesting offseason in Calgary, one that I think they were all hoping was going to be just a little bit shorter. Eric, thanks so much for taking some time for me today. Really appreciate it, buddy.
Hey, anytime. Thanks, Matt. Cheers, my man.
There he goes, Eric Francis from Sportsnet, and the Calgary Flames have some questions here. What happens with Johnny Gaudreau? What happens with Matthew Tkachuk? Do they decide that they want to stay in Calgary on long-term deals? Or does Johnny Gaudreau walk and Matthew Tkachuk says, I'm just going to take my qualifying offer and I'm going to walk myself to free agency where, as Anthony Stewart would say, I can get all the money. More on the Battle of Alberta in a bit when we talk to Arta Ocal from ESPN joining us at the top of the next hour. And Connor McGahey, Avs radio voice, right after that. It's coming up next on the Jeff Merrick Show. I'm Matt Marchese filling in for Jeff on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Jeff Merrick Show. I'm your host, Matt Marchese, filling in for Jeff Merrick, who will be back on the program on Monday. Lots going on in the NHL. As we know, Calgary Flames going home. Edmonton Oilers going to the Western Conference Final for the first time since 2006. The Carolina Hurricanes, one win away from the Eastern Conference Final, where the awaiting Tampa Bay Lightning are patiently waiting to see who their next opponent is going to be. And tonight, Colorado Avalanche can punch their ticket to the Western Conference Final against the Edmonton Oilers with a win over St. Louis in St. Louis tonight. You can watch that one on CBC and Sportsnet at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Very pleased to be joined on the line now by Arta Ocal from ESPN. Arta, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Happy to be on the Matt Marchese Show.
It's
going to be a lot of fun.
Let's hope Jeff doesn't hear that, because I'll be looking for another job.
He's listening, fuming right now, and he's like, what are you saying, man?
No, Jeff has said, always aim higher than the Jeff Merrick Show. So, I mean, we're working on it. I don't normally like to start off with serious stuff because, you know, hockey's supposed to be fun and whatnot. But in light of recent events with Nazem Kadri and I know you wrote an article for Anscape, and I was going through it and reading it. It's very powerful stuff. You know, there's a lot of hate in this world, and hockey's not supposed to have, like, it's supposed to, you know, guys are supposed to not like each other on the ice. But when it comes to the off-ice stuff, especially with minorities. We see a lot of it. It's disheartening. It's disgusting. And frankly, there's no place in the game for it. I know you sat down with Nazem Kadri to talk about everything that's gone on. And just what's your take on everything that's been going on and stuff that you've had to deal with over the course of your career, you know, to the point where you even thought about changing your name just to, you know, fit in. What's your kind of take on what's been going on and the support that Nazem Kadri has received over the past few days after all these horrific events?
Yeah. So first of all, thanks for asking that question. One thing that I've always felt, and it's certainly changing now with what we're seeing, is that talking about the paradigm is shifting as it pertains to talking about verbalizing and bringing to light the hate that many minority groups experience. I thought that as it pertains to Islam and Islamophobia and Muslims, that was very much late to the table. I felt like for a very long time, and others felt like this as well, who are Muslim or have a Middle Eastern heritage, that it was almost as if it was bad to hate every group, but it was okay when it came to Muslims and Islamophobia. It almost felt like that was the exception because of how Muslims and people who are of Islamic faith were portrayed in the media and the lack of knowledge, quite frankly, surrounding the religion. Because what Nazem Kadri, especially when the Hockey Diversity Alliance was launched in January, the text messages that you saw Naz receive, that's very common for Muslims around the world, let alone in North America and Canada or the United States. I know that because I felt that. I've seen those words. I've been called a terrorist. I've been called other words that really should not be repeated on radio or television. And it hurts and it stings. And I want to give a lot of credit, particularly to the good hockey fans and also the fans of the Colorado Avalanche that came out and showed support, because Nazem Kadri has said many times, including in an interview that you referenced that him and I did for The Point on ESPN, which is our weekly hockey show, and elsewhere as well, that he's just become numb to the point where he receives this so much that he just accepts it as a part of his life that he needs to put aside and push through. And that shouldn't be the case. And so to see the outpouring of support from the Avs faithful stand with Naz and for him to respond the way he did on the ice, I believe that true change is possible. I think that there's a long way to go, but the ongoing conversations are a good thing, because at the end of the day, I think a lot of it is just the fear of the unknown, and education will certainly get us to a point where people will not be so concerned or scared or whatever the case may be, whatever the reasons are that people are spewing hate in the first place. And so for me, my personal experience, like you said, I've experienced a lot of what Naz has gone through, and him and I have had conversations about this. And I applaud Naz for being the only Muslim player in the NHL that's active that I'm aware of. I'm the only Muslim broadcaster that I'm aware of that's hosting NHL games as a studio host. And so I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud of Naz. And the conversation is ongoing. And I applaud the good hockey fans and the Colorado Avalanche fans for their show of support for Naz as well.
Very well said. And like I stated, there's no place in the – forget just sports. There's no place in the world for that kind of hate. You grew up in Toronto, you grew up with hockey, and it was always, you know, the hockey fans, you know, the nice Canadians or whatever the case may be, but hockey fans always had this connotation that was attached to them that they're just nice people and that happens. But, you know, sometimes we do forget that there are always bad apples. It doesn't matter in what walk of life you're in. But especially just sports fans in general, people get heated and they say things that they really shouldn't be saying. And whether they mean it or not, it doesn't matter. You just, that kind of stuff should absolutely not be said and should not even be thought of, frankly. But you mentioned, as we move on, there's no real nice transition here, but I mean, we'll try. You mentioned Nazem Kadri's performance the following game. And that to me was such a, such a powerful thing, because you talked about, you know, him accepting, or just, you know, deciding that he needs to accept this as part of what he's going to deal with and just push it aside. But I mean, that's not a difficult thing to do. And then to go out and perform like he did and perform like he has over the course of his career, to me, and I don't think I appreciated this when he was in Toronto, that to me makes a really special kind of athlete, where you can push aside all this negativity and still perform at such a high level.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, no matter what a player does on the ice, and yes, no one is hiding the fact that Nazem Kadri has a rap sheet, right? Like, no one's hiding the fact that he has had past transgressions on the ice. He has suspensions. He has dubious plays. Nobody is hiding from that. You read his Players Tribune article, you know, like the way that he is trying to get over that. But that's on the ice. That's part of the game. That is not... That is in no way, shape, or form a license to be able to get away with spewing hate because of something that happens on the ice. Those are two completely different conversations. So what Naz was able to do in this series, really, you know, he's in many instances, he has been a man possessed in terms of trying to will this team past the second round wall that they have been bumping into for the past several years and has really been building since 2001. And so, and the last game, it was almost poetic in a way, the last game for the Avalanche to be up by 3 goals and for the Blues to make this incredible comeback. And then for Nathan MacKinnon to score the goal of the playoffs with how many minutes remaining? I think it was like 2:30 or 3 minutes remaining. So it was late in the third. He scores this goal that would deflate 99.9% of NHL teams, only for the Blues to tie it up, send it to overtime, and then win it in overtime with a former Leaf scoring the overtime goal who had played, what, 7 minutes of ice time in the game? Like, just the whole storyline of that game and how the Blues were able to come back into it and how the Avalanche have this narrative of they can't get past the second round despite how strong they are on paper, how much cup favorites many people believe them to be. Again, it rears its ugly head, and they now have 2 more opportunities to close it out. It's just to me, that's one of the more fascinating storylines of the postseason, and I'm really looking forward to this game.
Well, the Colorado Avalanche are basically just the Toronto Maple Leafs, but in the second round, right? That's how they're going to be viewed until they win a second round game with this core. Arto Okel is my guest here from ESPN.
Leafs fans and Avs fans would love to switch places. I'm sure that Leafs fans would love to switch places to see the second round.
As a Leaf fan myself, yes, I would absolutely love to see the second round at some point in the next 20 years. Although I'm not very optimistic based on the track record. Okay, the Battle of Alberta. That 71 seconds last night was eerily similar, and I know you're a wrestling guy, to WrestleMania 33, Brock Lesnar and Goldberg. Because that was a short match. It had so much of nothing and everything all wrapped up. And this one was 71 seconds last night. The fastest 4 goals that we've seen in an NHL playoff game. Are you sad like I am that the Battle of Alberta is over? Because, man, that was a lot of fun.
Yes and no. I'm sad that it's over because the entertainment value is probably the highest that we'll see in the entire postseason. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that we get a lot of conference final and Stanley Cup final entertainment to that degree. But it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to match that. That was some of the best playoff hockey that you could put that on the Mount Rushmore of entertaining series from start to finish in our lifetime. And I don't think too many people would argue that. It would be in the conversation at the very least. That's how entertaining it was. The reason I'm not upset is because, and I say this with all due respect to the fans of the Calgary Flames, Calgary is a wonderful city. I am elated that Connor McDavid is in a Final Four. And I think that the further Connor McDavid specifically goes, the better it is for hockey in North America. I believe that with every round, more eyeballs And I think maybe I'm speaking because I live in the United States and I cover hockey in America. It just feels like a lot more people are being introduced to Connor McDavid, and not just like maybe they knew who he was and maybe they just registered in their minds that he was a good hockey player. But now with every victory and every round that the Edmonton Oilers progress, and specifically Connor McDavid, it truly feels like people are starting to understand, if they're not in the hockey bubble already and they're just discovering playoff hockey and, oh, this is an exciting game and, wow, I should be watching more hockey, whatever the case may be, and they learn about Connor McDavid, it truly feels right now that they are starting to understand that Connor McDavid is not just a generational player, but somebody that should be spoken about in the same breath as a LeBron James or a Tom Brady. The only thing missing is the championships. But in terms of the play on the ice and how much ahead Connor McDavid is as compared to his peers, I think that there are a lot of people outside the hockey bubble that are really starting to understand this, particularly in the United States. And for that reason, I get very excited of seeing Connor McDavid progress into further later rounds.
Yeah, like if you showed a new hockey fan, like, okay, you've never seen a game before. Here's game one between the Oilers and the Flames. I'm pretty sure you would have a lot of people hooked based on how the game went, that crazy second period. Something about second periods in this series that has both of these teams going. But I do agree with you in that, you know, having Connor McDavid get to a Final Four helps progress the sport probably more than any other player at this point, because like you said, there seems to be a big gap between Connor McDavid and the next guy. And maybe you can make that argument that it's Leon Draisaitl right now, that maybe it's Nathan MacKinnon or Austin Matthews, but McDavid is playing on a totally different level. And I know that the league has to be salivating at the thought of Edmonton versus Colorado, Connor McDavid versus Nathan MacKinnon. And you can make, you know, Leon Draisaitl versus Cale Makar and go down the list. Like, that's a really star-laden potential series. And there's nothing against the St. Louis Blues because they're a really good team. But the star power on the Avs and the Oilers really, really would make for quite a sight. And that's the type of thing, a series that you would want to see go seven games because there is so much star power involved.
You're absolutely right. And I would even go so far as to say, I grew up in Toronto. I know the sentiments in the hockey bubble, in the hockey community, and in the NHL, that it's not about the name on the back of the sweater. It's about the crest at the front of the sweater. I understand this completely. That has been the sentiment. That is what you're taught in minor hockey. That is what hockey players, we don't say I, we say we, understand all of that. But in my humble opinion, and I'm sure that this sounds logical when you hear it, if we want hockey to truly grow into a sport that is as major and as discussed as, let's say, the NFL and NBA, if we ever have those, you know, major dreams that it grows to even, you know, debatable levels or even further than where it is today, to me, we have to focus on the superstars. We are entering a world, particular, I see it all the time, especially when I talk to sports fans in America, in the United States. They, especially the younger generation, they tend to follow the superstars from team to team. They are fans of LeBron James. They are fans of Steph Curry. And then secondarily, they are fans of the Golden State Warriors. They'll be a fan of LeBron when he's with the Miami Heat, then when he's with the Cleveland Cavaliers, then when he's with the Los Angeles Lakers. They will continue to buy those jerseys because it's LeBron and not because it's their hometown team or the team they grew up cheering for. They're cheering for superstars. And when Connor McDavid continues to make it, if Connor McDavid raises the Stanley Cup this year, to me, that could be one of the best and biggest moments for hockey in our generation. The visual of the best hockey player raising the Stanley Cup and inspiring a young generation of sports fan to follow Connor McDavid. And I'm not putting anything out there in the universe, Matt, okay? Like, I'm not trying to say, hey, like, he should be out of Edmonton. Not whatsoever. I'm saying, let's say he moves around in his career. Gretzky did, anyone can, right? let's say he goes to, I don't know, New York, and all of a sudden kids are following him to that team and buying his sweaters there, et cetera. Like, to me, the superstar angle, as much as it feels counter to hockey culture, needs to start getting accepted a lot more. And I feel like that is one giant key to further putting hockey in pop culture, in the zeitgeist.
Yeah, I know that ideally, especially for U.S. numbers, it would be preferred if Connor McDavid played on another team but Edmonton. But, you know, going back to your reference about Golden State and Steph Curry, the Golden State Warriors draw big TV numbers because not because their market is big. Like San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose, that's a pretty big area, but that's the sixth largest TV market in the U.S. So it's not as if it's New York or Los Angeles or Chicago, because those are just for Chicago's sake, over a million people bigger. But when we talk about the Golden State Warriors, they're exciting to watch. Steph Curry is an exciting player to watch. So I think that's where you know, some of this logic of, well, it has to be a big U.S. TV market in order for the Stanley Cup to really get a lot of eyeballs on it. But I agree with your point. Like, it could be a lasting image if Connor McDavid raises the Stanley Cup. He's the most exciting player in the NHL right now. It's not even remotely close. And if you could somehow liken, you know, the Edmonton Oilers to the Golden State Warriors, that's probably the most comparable thing that you can make between the two sports. Is they're very exciting offensively. They have some of the most exciting players in the world that are on those teams. I do believe that, you know, despite him playing in Edmonton and all the negativity that goes with that with the U.S. TV markets, I really do agree with you that it could be a huge thing for the NHL if Connor McDavid gets to the Stanley Cup final, and then he gets showcased on that platform where the games mean even more, and this is the pinnacle of the sport, and Connor McDavid could be the shining star for them.
Yeah, and plus the Oilers already have the Splash Brothers in Draisaitl and McDavid.
So, exactly.
So the comparison tracks.
So the series that we haven't gotten to yet, the Rangers and the Hurricanes. You know, I said this to Elliot Friedman earlier. The Carolina Hurricanes have to be the most intriguing team in these playoffs, in that I've never seen a more Jekyll and Hyde performance. At home, they are absolutely incredible. They don't allow any goals. They allow no shots. They lock down defensively, and they really shut teams down. On the road, they are a completely different team. They can't win. It makes no sense. And when I look at both the Rangers and the Hurricanes, based on what I've seen from the Tampa Bay Lightning, I don't think either of those teams can beat Tampa Bay right now.
Yeah. Well, except if we buy into the Hurricanes, the home team always wins in a Hurricanes game. And if that is the case, Matt, then unless the Hurricanes play the Colorado Avalanche in the final, they will be winning every series in seven moving forward, because they will have home ice advantage the rest of the way. So a preemptive congratulations to the Carolina Hurricanes, because every home team wins their games for winning the Stanley Cup. I look forward to seeing Rod Brind'Amour raising the cup in a suit, and Sebastian Aho and Vinny Trocheck, you know, skating it around the ice, because the home team always wins. That aside, they had a strong defensive game, man. The last game, they had a very strong defensive game. They didn't allow the Rangers a lot of shots at all. And they played a game that I would imagine Rod Brind'Amour would have a smile on his face afterwards, because they were very stingy in their own end, and they weren't allowing a lot of high quality chances for the Rangers. And if there was ever a game for that home team wins every game narrative to snap, it would be game six. I do believe that the Rangers will come out, will start the game very hot. Shesterkin probably will stand on his head, and it'll be up to the Hurricanes to try and continue that pressure in the offensive zone. But it does feel like if there was ever a game to snap it, it would be game six.
you know, it's really like I'm the thought, like as you were going through that, just the thought process and the thinking that the Carolina Hurricanes, based on where they seeded in the regular season, could have home ice the rest of the way and could win every home game and lose every road game and still win the Stanley Cup. That would be the greatest Stanley Cup performance that I think I've ever seen in my life, because it's the most unheard of thing. It's absolutely asinine that that could even be a thing. But as they've shown us in these playoffs, that seems to be where this thing is going. It's absolutely wild. You know, on the Lightning, we saw them absolutely put on a clinic against the Toronto Maple Leafs in the last two games of the series there. And then they carried it over with a sweep of the Florida Panthers. Shockingly, the Panthers, you know, the power play stunk. They only scored one goal in the playoffs on the power play. They get shut out in the final game in that sweep. And Tampa Bay just looks like a team. You know, Jeff references this on the show a lot, the conversation that they had with Steven Stamkos prior to the season, where he said, we just need to get to the playoffs because once we're there, we know what to do. They were without Braden Point. They've got guys banged up. We know all that. There's that visual of Steven Stamkos going off the ice and then eventually Brandon Hagel following him and Stamkos coming back out as if it were Dude Love coming in the Royal Rumble, and then he's replaced by Mankind, who is replaced by Cactus Jack. And yet this team, despite whatever is thrown in front of them, is able to, you know, in the words of Al Davis, just win, baby, when it comes to the playoffs. This really is the greatest team that we've seen assembled in terms of, you know, the last two seasons and into this season, probably in the last 20 years, because it doesn't matter who comes in or who comes out. They just know how to win.
First thing I want to say is, in the hockey off season, if you're still hosting this show, we're going to have to do like wrestling segments together. That's number one.
No problem.
The second thing is, so I asked a lot of my, our analysts at ESPN about the Lightning, and Ryan Callahan, we used to play with them, obviously, calls them the Tampa Bay Findaways. And he always referenced how it always felt like when he was playing on that team, but even watching them now, that there'd be no excuses. They just find a way. That was their mantra. They just find a way to win. They do it. They put their nose down. They find the way. And let's talk about that Panthers Lightning series. On paper, you could argue that going into the series, clearly the Panthers objectively got better, right? They really traded up. They leveled up, pardon me, at the trade deadline. They got a bunch of great pieces, Claude Giroux, shining example, Ben Chiarot, et cetera. Like, on paper, they leveled up going into the postseason and certainly were a better team than the last year's Battle of Florida going into that series. And Tampa, you could argue, got worse, if nothing else, than the Braden Point injury, but also they lost that really constructive third line. They did replace pieces. They got in Brandon Hagel, et cetera. But on paper, you could argue that the team was a little bit worse. And then factor in also having gone through two full postseasons. So even though a lot of our analysts will say it's not that big a deal, like the tiredness factor, et cetera, like, you know, in the moment, you know, the players are still motivated to play and there's still, you know, this is still ways to stay fresh on the ice. You could say that the Panthers were in a great position to be very competitive in this series, and that just simply didn't happen. The Lightning completely dismantled them. The Panthers scored three goals the entire series. They were one of the highest scoring regular season teams in the last 25 years, and they mustered only three goals in that series against the Tampa Bay Lightning, which is unbelievable. And the only question I have for them, and maybe it doesn't matter because they are a team, like I said, that went through those two long postseasons and they might welcome the rest, is I asked a lot of our analysts, like, what is the ideal amount of time between series? If you were to say, I want this many days of rest so that it's not too little, so that you do get some rest, but it's not too much that rust starts to settle in. And the sweet spot I heard was 4 days. So the Lightning are essentially going to get a week, or like maybe probably 8 or 7 or somewhere between 7 and 9 days, I'm guessing. because they won on Monday and they're still off. So somewhere like that. So they'll get an extra few days. The only question I'll have is how are they going to look in game one? Other than that, I feel like they're going to be a team ready to go. And they have to be, even with Colorado still in the Stanley Cup, to me, based on what they've done, beating the Leafs, who were a Stanley Cup favorite, beating the Panthers, who on paper were the best team going into the playoffs, you could argue, they have to be the favorites now. They have to be, no matter who they play, they have to be the favorites in many people's eyes to win the Stanley Cup.
That I absolutely cannot disagree with after what I saw. Arda, always full value when you come on. Greatly appreciate it. You took a lot of time for me today, and I'm sure we will be chatting soon, whether it be hockey or wrestling.
Absolutely. Look forward to it, man. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. There he goes, Arda Okal from ESPN. When we come back, Connor McGahee, Colorado Avalanche radio play-by-play voice, as we get set for Avs and Blues tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on CBC and Sportsnet. We'll get the lay of the land with the Avs coming off that comeback loss to the St. Louis Blues in overtime. Tyler Bozak, the hero, as we know. We're going to find out what's going on with Colorado, the mindset heading into Game 6, another potential elimination game, and if the ghosts of playoff past are creeping in for the Colorado Avalanche. I'm Matt Marchese, filling in for Jeff Merrick on the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Jeff Merrick Show. Matt Marchese filling in for Jeff Merrick, who will be back on Monday. He's enjoying a nice little long weekend. On assignment, as they would say in the biz. All right. Game 6 is tonight. Avalanche and Blues in St. Louis. 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. You can watch that one on CBC and Sportsnet. Pleased to be joined on the line by Avs radio voice, Connor McGahee. Connor, how are you today?
I'm good, Matt. How are you?
I'm excellent. And the reason why I'm excellent is because we get another night where we get to watch Nathan MacKinnon hopefully put on a show. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, yeah, I mean, if the other night wasn't good enough for you, I mean, I'm sure he can conjure up an encore. But, yeah, that's about as good a show as you can get right there in game number 5.
Well, you watch him every night, and he's one of those players that it's just every time he touches the puck, you feel like he can do something with it and create magic. And the one thing that I notice about Nathan MacKinnon, much like a lot of the other elite players, and Connor McDavid comes to mind as well, The ability that he has to do things at full speed is absolutely incredible. And the other thing is, too, is it's something that he has that Connor McDavid doesn't is, as Jeff Merrick would refer to him, he's like a rhinoceros on skates. And when you can combine that kind of skill with that kind of skating ability, he really is a force. And it must be a privilege to watch him every single night.
Oh, without a doubt. Eric Johnson had a great line either last season or the year before where he said he's like a combination. Forget the liger. He's like a combination of a bull and a cheetah. He's got that strength and the speed all wrapped up into one retainer. But on that last play, his third goal of the game, I mean, when he got the puck in his own zone, the second he touched it, the crowd came to life. And you could almost feel like something special was going to happen, and it sure did, because he had the speed, he had the strength, and he had the skill to tuck it in short side on Ville Husso. But everyone kept saying that he was due for a game in the series, and I think Nathan MacKinnon was tired of really that being a piece of the conversation, is that, well, Nathan MacKinnon hasn't quite showed up yet. He sure did in game number 5. And Jerry Bednar is saying this morning in his media availability that, he expects Nathan MacKinnon to make an impact yet again tonight here in St. Louis in game 6.
Yeah, he's just such a treat to watch. And, you know, I mentioned this to Elliot Friedman earlier, and even in the loss, that really did feel like kind of a career-defining moment for Nathan MacKinnon in that, you know, everything that went along with it. You talked about as soon as he picked up the puck behind the net, that the crowd just, you could feel it in the air that something special was going to happen. Even though they lost, it really did feel like one of those moments that we can look back on and say, like, that epitomizes that, especially that goal, that epitomizes what Nathan MacKinnon is as a player. And we know that Nathan MacKinnon is not satisfied with anything less than a Stanley Cup. He's made that very apparent in media avails and interviews that he's done. But that moment, I just can look back on it and say, like, that's Nathan MacKinnon, the player, the guy that can bring you out of your seat and do things that only a handful of players can do.
And Matt, we've seen the elevation of him as a player and as a person. I don't think I've maybe seen anybody mature as much as Nathan MacKinnon, especially over the past three seasons. I mean, you're referring to his comments after Game 6 versus Vegas last year, where he said he's been in the league for 9 years and we'll keep it G-rated. He hasn't won anything. And that's motivating for a guy like that with that amount of skill who has superstar status in the National Hockey League. And he takes pride in being one of the elites, and he is that. And so when you have the skill, link up with that motivation and the maturity of a leader, especially when it comes to on-ice play, I think that is the difference between this year and really the last couple of playoff campaigns for the Colorado Avalanche. And I mean, we're spoiled that we get to watch it every single night, But the times that people do, they see that he has the ability to change a game instantly. And he took it upon himself to score the first couple there for Colorado and then really give them a chance to win there in the third period. Cale Makar is saying, we let Nathan MacKinnon down after that loss in overtime. So I would not expect that to be the case tonight versus the Blues. I think MacKinnon is now on track and maybe expect some other superstars on the team to step up and not let anybody down tonight.
You mentioned the you know, Cale Makar saying that they let Nathan MacKinnon down. You know, there's always this lingering thing with this group in that it's very well documented that this team has struggled to get out of the second round. They haven't done it yet. Last year was a really tough pill to swallow. I know momentum doesn't necessarily carry over from game to game, but is there potentially some doubt creeping in with this group? Like, oh no, here we go again. Or is it, you talked about the maturity level of especially a Nathan MacKinnon, but even these other guys to say, hey, it's a new game. We had them on the ropes. We just need to have that little bit more of an edge, or we just need to be able to close them out because we know that we're capable of winning this series.
Yeah, I think that it's the latter, Matt, if I'm being honest, because they looked at video yesterday, met today about, hey, you know, we're right there, but here's what we did different to allow a very good team in St. Louis back into it, really in all situations. Lucky on the first goal by Tarasenko, and Nichushkin doesn't have a stick, and then really the last two by Falk and Thomas to tie it up twice, really, where the puck was in the perfect place, the perfect time. But the Avalanche have shown an ability this year, which may not have been there in past seasons, to bounce back and really have, if we're speaking in Ted Lasso terms, the memory of a goldfish. And they've done that better, which has actually worked to their benefit, because even inside the season, there was a stretch there, December, January, early February, where they had a bunch of comeback wins. I mean, when the Leafs were in town, they're down by three. They come back to tie it, and then Devontaeves wins it in overtime. And that's just a small example of the fight-back ability that this team has this year that they haven't had in years past. Because if that same scenario, either the Leafs or really any game in this series where the Blues have scored first and the Avalanche have come back to tie it and gone on to win, in past years, regular season or playoffs, if they're down, they're out. And I just don't get the sense that that's this year's team. And they've made massive strides. And I just think that their response in game three after losing at home in game two was fantastic. And I expect the same again tonight here in game six after losing at home in game five.
Anytime we can get a Ted Lasso reference on this show, it's very, very well received. Connor McGahee is the Colorado Avalanche radio play-by-play voice, joining Matt Marchese on the Jeff Merrick Show. Okay, Mikko Rantanen had an incredible season. He scored 36 goals. He had over 90 points. And the playoffs roll around, and he's only got the one goal in nine games, but he's making plays. He still has 11 points, but is this something where they need to kind of get him going, or it just he needs one just to kind of get back on scoring track here? Is there something that St. Louis is doing in this series that's kind of taken him out, or is it just the chances aren't falling his way right now?
Yeah, I think, again, it's probably the latter, Matt. He is, if not one of the power forward in the National Hockey League, and he's about as strong as on the puck as you can have, and he creates his own chances and his own luck. And I think that he knows that he can find another step and another level. And everyone always looks at goals. I mean, he was leading the team in assists going into game five, you know, but very quietly, as you mentioned. So, we were talking about Nathan MacKinnon not coming alive, and he did. Cale Makar and Mikko Rantanen are two others that have yet to come alive, and I think they feel like they need to. So he's right there. I mean, he's in the mix of everything. They've moved him down the second line to sort of create some opportunities and really re-energize their top six a bit, and he's fine with that. I just think that he's too good to really not make an impact in the game. And I just think that coming up here soon, you know, the dam is about to break. He's definitely that type of player.
Yeah, Rantanen is one of my favorite players to watch just because he's just so, in a lot of cases, he's very unassuming. And part of that is because of who he plays with. You know, he's on the same team as Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar and Gabriel Landeskog gets a lot of the spotlight as well because he's the captain of the team. And Nazem Kadri got a lot of shine because, you know, he kind of, I wouldn't say came out of nowhere, but his season offensively was very unexpected. And yet here's Mikko Rantanen, 92 points in the season. That to me was the quietest 92 point season that I think I've ever seen, because even when guys are hurt, you know, there was a time where Landeskog was hurt and MacKinnon was hurt, and he carried this team along with Nazem Kadri. And I think, especially, there's always the East Coast bias. We understand that. But I don't think Mikko Rantanen gets enough credit for how, I don't want to call him underrated because he's a star, but I think he's underappreciated by the rest of the league.
I think so, too. And there's not a ton of flash, right? I mean, he's about as efficient and productive as you can ask from a star forward in the National Hockey League. But like we were talking about earlier, with the speed and the strength of guys like MacKinnon and McDavid, Cale Makar on this team. I mean, think about that. Mikko Rantanen is overshadowed by the flashiness and the wow factor of Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar. I mean, nobody can really put up or keep up with that. They just have to do things their own style. And Mikko Rantanen's style is just pure production. You mentioned 92 points. I mean, I agree. I feel like we didn't really talk about Mikko Rantanen at all this season, which is hysterical considering he's 8 points away from 100 points. So I just think that stylistically, maybe that's why we don't talk about him, because he's overshadowed by, you know, the eye-popping talent of somebody like Nathan MacKinnon or Cale Makar.
Yeah, it's funny. Mikko Rantanen led the team in scoring. He did play 10 more games than Nathan MacKinnon, but led the team in scoring, and we don't talk about him enough. It's really wild. It really is an embarrassment of riches that the team has offensively. And one of those guys is Cale Makar. And we know all about the offensive ability. We know how he can put guys in a turnstile, and it's so much fun to watch. But when you watch him play, what is the most surprising thing, or the thing that nobody talks about enough about Cale Makar's game that maybe flies under the radar? Because for me, it's his ability to play physically, and I don't think he gets enough credit for that.
Totally, totally correct, Matt. I'm glad you noticed that too, because with as good a march as Roman Josi had, and he, you know, got a lot of attention, and he should have, when they went head-to-head in a playoff series in the first round, offensively, and especially defensively, Cale Makar was the better player. And for him, he is an underrated hitter. His timing is perfect. His form is perfect. He had a hit versus Carolina and stall earlier this season or late this season at home. It was a picture perfect hit and just put Stahl right on his back. And I think because of his size, you don't expect that coming from him. But his smarts and his technique are so good when it comes to defending that, it just sort of takes you by surprise. And everyone, like you said, wants to talk about 10 points in the series versus Nashville. The fact that he's always up there has, you know, the assist lead, the scoring lead at some point for the Avalanche. But we never talk about his defense, which is almost flawless. And it's the same thing with Devon Toews. Both of them are such good defenders, and they're great offensively, and everyone loves goals and points and assists, but you never appreciate the other end of the ice. And that's where I think Cale Makar is so underrated, because his smarts go two ways. Offensively, yes, but I think especially because of his position, defensively especially.
Connor McGahee is my guest here, the Colorado Avalanche radio play-by-play voice here on the Jeff Merrick Show. And, you know, you talked about Devon Toews there and how good he is defensively. He had a career year offensively. He did have 57 points in 66 games. He's been the perfect complement for Cale Makar. And, frankly, Joe Sakic should probably be locked up for stealing him from the New York Islanders for what he paid, because this is a player that was talked about as, you know, potentially playing for Team Canada at the Winter Olympics if they had, in fact, sent NHL players, and would have been paired with Cale Makar. And he got him for 2 second-round picks, which for the Avalanche don't matter because they are absolutely in win-now mode. And, you know, Joe Sakic has pulled off some moves, and he's always involved, and he's always doing his due diligence. But Devon Toews has to be near the top of the list as one of the greater heists of his career.
Without a doubt. And you mentioned the 2 second-round picks from the New York Islanders. And then, as an RFA at the time, they signed him to a 4-year deal at $4 million per. And to me, that sounds like a pretty darn good deal. So that's good business all the way around from Joe Sakic, not only, and Chris McFarland, who's the assistant GM, to not only see that. And, you know, they did a deal with the Bridgeport Sound Tigers, beg your pardon, and their captain, Kyle Burrows, to bring him into the Avalanche organization. And this was just before the Devon Toews trade. And I got the feeling that when they were doing that deal, they were looking at the rest of the Islanders organization, and they saw that they were going to have to make a decision. Is it Mayfield who stays? Is it Devon Toews who stays? And they were able to make a push and eventually a deal for Devon Toews. And like you said, literally steal him away and make him a centerpiece of this Avalanche lineup. When you talk about smarts, when you talk about maturity, when you talk about a steady hand at the wheel, that is Devon Toews. And that's why him and Cale Makar are the perfect D partners. In my humble and often meaningless opinion, the best D pair in the National Hockey League. But I still can't believe it when you think, you know, that maybe could not have happened for a while. But again, probably the best piece of business that Joe Sakic has done in a long time was to get Devon Toews for that price and lock him up, at least for the moment. That will change considering his play over the past 3 seasons. But I cannot imagine this team's success without a pillar that is named Devon Toews.
One more before we let you go here. One player that has really, really had to endure over the course of this season, and it's so great to see him play, and now he's getting an even more elevated role with Sam Girard out, is Bowen Byram. You know, he came into the league, there was a lot of hype, and for good reason. He's a great player, but, you know, he's dealt with the concussion issues, he's dealt with some off-ice issues, and there was a chance that Bowen Byram wasn't going to play this season after his latest concussion. And he's come back, and you know, he's a great player to watch, but it really does feel like he's learning a lot on the ice watching Cale Makar, which, I mean, there's not very many defensemen that you can watch and have a better understanding of how they play and really kind of flourish behind that guy while getting to watch him every night.
Without a doubt. And back in January, when he sort of took himself out, the leave of absence because of the head injuries, to come back from that, A, is impressive no matter who you are and no matter where you are, what you're doing. But second of all, to come back and be just a steady success. I mean, before the Oilers did what they did last night. I mean, in that game number five, Bo Byram, you know, after two periods was a plus nine. That was second in the Stanley Cup playoffs to Connor McDavid. So, again, you're talking about a steady hand at the wheel in Bo Byram and Sam Girard out. Bo Byram up on that second unit power play. And he's been with Eric Johnson for most of these playoffs. And Eric Johnson really has been a father figure. He was for Sam Girard, sort of called them the odd couple because of their physical differences, you know, as a D pair for a long time. Then Eric Johnson was with Bo Byram. So, you know, Byram is more, I mean, he's about as complete a defenseman as you can ask for. And he's selected fourth overall. Cale Makar selected fourth overall, both in different drafts, obviously. But everyone expects maybe some offensive explosions out of Bo Byram like they get from Cale Makar. They're just different in that regard. But Bo Byram, and Eric Johnson has said this on numerous occasions, could be a top pair defenseman on really any club in the National Hockey League. Now, if it hadn't been, you know, for the embarrassment of riches, the two that we've just mentioned, Cale Makar and Devon Toews, that may be the case with Bo Byram. That is just how well this blue line has been constructed for the Colorado Avalanche. But I just think what he's been able to do after a really hard 18 to 20 months and dealing not with, because let's be honest, head injuries are so much different and obviously more serious and then oftentimes harder to come back from than anything else. And for him physically and mentally to come in and again, be a solid piece for Colorado in the Stanley Cup playoffs so far is really impressive. And I hope that he gets the attention that he deserves.
Well, Connor, I'm in the same boat as you. It's great to see him out there, and you know, it's nice to see him have some success at this level. We're right up against the clock. Thank you so much for taking a good chunk of your day to spend with me, and we'll do it again soon. Thanks, Connor.
It is always my great pleasure. Thanks, Matt.
There he goes, Connor McGahey, Avs radio voice, and like to thank all of our guests that appeared on the program today. Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada. And 32 Thoughts, Eric Francis from Sportsnet on the Flames, Arda Okal, amazing as usual from ESPN, and just now Connor McGahey, the Colorado Avalanche radio voice. For my technical operator, Lance Kennedy, I'm Matt Marchese, filling in for Jeff Merrick on the Jeff Merrick Show. Don't worry, he'll be back on Monday. You've been listening to the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.